That ball skied deep to left field, all the way back near the wall, and that ball is gone. Grand slam for Angel Martinez. And just like that, the Guardians have taken a four-run lead here in the 10th. And Class A finishes off the game, a 10-6 final, as he strikes out Cam Smith to end this one. Angel Martinez with a grand slam in the top half of the 10th inning is the difference tonight as the Guardians win 10-6.
So on Monday, Seth and I did a segment at the suggestion of a listener. Hippolito said, hey, you know, it'd be a good segment coming off of that sweep of the Dodgers. When will the Astros next lose a series? Hadn't lost a series since the middle of May. 13 straight series either ended in a split or a win for the Stros. When will that be? We took the bait and we did the segment and we said, well, certainly, they're so good at home, the Astros. Certainly, it shan't be this week that that happens. It won't happen to the Guardians. They've lost 10 in a row. They can't score runs. Seth and I could get seven people together that score more runs than the Guardians could over the course of 10 games. They scored 15 runs over 10 games prior to coming to Daikin Park. They're not going to lose to the Rangers later this week. No, certainly. Maybe after the All-Star break sometime. Nope. They will lose this series. They may win tonight, but they will lose this series. And that might be the most frustrating part, Seth, is it anything that makes us nervous at all? Is that if this were a couple of losses that you know, they lost 7-5 on Monday, they lost 10-6 in extra innings last night. Credit Todd Callis and Space City Home Network for the call on the grand slam that Josh Hader gave up in the 10th inning last night. Ball total Crawford box shot to left field, landed in the front row of the Crawford boxes, but a loss is a loss. I might be able to cope with this a little bit better over the last couple days if it was kind of, you know, like 3-2, 2-1, you know, 2-0, whatever. Just low scoring games, the bats don't get going and you get great pitching, which the Astros have had all year. Hunter Brown gave up 6 runs last night. You know, Josh Hader, albeit in a second inning of work last night, we should point that out. It's not like they brought Hader in and he, you know, he just pooped the bed. Like he was good in the 9th inning. They brought him in the 9th to keep it at 6-6. Feeling like, all right, well, you know, we'll bring our closer in. We know it's 6-6. We'll bring our closer in. We feel like home, you know, at home, we got the momentum in this game. We're starting to hit a little bit. We get it to the 10th inning. We're going to win this thing. And it didn't work out that way. So I don't know. To me, it's a couple of games. I hate that they're losing a series, but it was going to happen eventually. I'm not nervous about Hunter Brown or Josh Hader based on one bad night.
The only thing I'd be worried about with Hunter Brown is just how much hard contact there was. I won't get into the super advanced stats here, but on average, Brown allows 85.7 mile per hour exit velocity. Last night, there were 20 balls in play that averaged 93.2 miles per hour.
Okay.
It's just way more hard contact than you're used to seeing out of Hunter Brown. And as he said, I just kind of felt like they were all over everything. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know whether it was something perhaps that they had picked up mechanically, whether he was tipping it or whatever it might be. That's the one thing that makes me nervous is that, okay, hopefully whatever it was, maybe it was just random dumb luck and he didn't execute, you know, pristinely by his standards. But even when he doesn't execute pristinely, he doesn't have performances like that.
Right.
So the fact that it did seem like they were just expecting the change up at times, that's what would make me nervous. But I also know that between the Astros organization and the way Hunter Brown prepares, that he's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm torn as to whether I want to see him before the All-Star break to get it figured out or if I want him to just go ahead and rest his body, get relaxed, and spend your time working on whatever you need to work on.
Yeah, as the team goes, look, to me the most frustrating thing about last night was they struck out 15 times last night. The Guardians only struck out 6 times in that game. So when you've got things, you know, when you're making contact, making things happen, that's good. The Astros had so much traffic on the bases, and it seemed that the worst possible hitters were coming up at the worst possible times in this game.
They were 2-for-21 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
That tells you a lot of how it felt last night watching. Altuve came up in a clutch moment to tie the game and to eventually send it into extra innings.
Yeah.
But when you've got Cooper, Hummel, and you've got Zach Short as guys that are probably what they are in their careers, yeah, you're going to have some nights like this where you can't rely on them to be your heroes.
They were 0 for 9 with 7 strikeouts last night, the two of them. And they were, you know, and they've sandwiched in between them was Mauricio Dubon, who went 3 for 5 last night. Taylor Trammell went 2 for 5 last night. Like that, those two spots in the lineup this was the game where I'm finally like, yeah, this is what a guy who is a journeyman. Those are both Cooper Hummel and Zach Short are both fringe minor league major. They're quadruple A guys.
But even despite all that though, and despite those guys playing the way you probably should expect them to play in any given game, the reason you lost, I guess the reason you lost and where you feel let down is that Hunter Brown wasn't his typical self and Josh Hader wasn't his typical self.
Yeah.
They still, even with that janky lineup, they've got a permanent getaway day lineup at this point.
Yeah.
Even with all of that going on, if you got a standard performance out of Hunter Brown or Josh Hader, then you've got a much better chance of winning that game.
No doubt. Like, that's the thing, too. Like, you and I have been sitting here, and we're not the only ones sitting here going, how is this team doing? All of baseball is saying that about the Astros right now. Like, how are they doing this? How are they winning these games? I have a hard time getting upset after losses if after the wins we're going, I have no idea how they're doing this. You know?
Sean, you know I have a hard time admitting that I'm wrong, basically because there aren't that many opportunities to do it.
Yeah.
But I have to say, for those who were insisting yesterday, you know, the Astros, you got to watch it. They played down to the level of the competition. If all it was the strikeouts by Hummel and Zach Short, I would still say to those people what I said yesterday, which is what, like, who are they playing down to? A lot of the guys that have been performing well are guys that are those bad teams that you would typically play down to, or those bad players you'd take to play down to. Last night, where Hunter Brown and Josh Hader are the guys that let you down versus a bad team, they're not it's not the Rockies or anything. I might have to agree with them.
Yep.
Yeah, they played down to the level of their competition.
They may have. Given that it's those guys, I tend to agree with you on that. Yeah, it was funny. Like last night, that's where we're at with this lineup. As you're getting into situations in games, close games, where you'd start to look at, okay, lefty-righty type stuff going on with the opposing relievers and bringing in, okay, we need a lefty bat here, you know, that kind of thing. Amy turns to me at one point during like the seventh or eighth inning. She's like, do you think they'll pinch hit for, maybe it was Zach Short or somebody. And I said, Amy, if they had somebody that was worth pinch hitting for Zach Short, he would already be playing in the lineup. Like this is how bad it is right now. Or just, it's not bad. It just is what it is right now. Like the first two guys they bring off the bench last night to do something in a substitute fashion was Kennedy Corona to pinch run for Isak Paredes. And then Shea Whitcomb had to play second base and gets up there. Like these guys are not—they're not Major League Baseball players. They're I'm looking at the box score. There are 11 names in the hitting portion of the box score. The 9 people that started and the 2 people that got brought in. And you look at the names: Kennedy Corona, not a big leaguer. Shea Whitcomb, not a big leaguer. Cooper Hummel, not a big leaguer. Zach Short, Taylor Trammell. That's 6 of the 11 guys. Like, and the 5 guys that they have in here that I would say, yeah, those are big league players. Isak Paredes, very good. Cam Smith is still in midway through his rookie season. Altuve's a legend. Yiner Diaz was starting to hit a little bit, but even he's still a relatively young player. Caratini and Dubon. Like other than Jose Altuve, none of them are anybody that is a name that scares an opposing team.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just,
or even has kind of stayed on this. Like when it comes to Zach Short and Taylor Trammell, those guys are just kind of journeyman veteran type.
I mean,
they're triple A players,
right?
You know, they're
right.
Guys that in any given year have a smattering of appearances in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I should be fair, like Isak Paredes, very very solid. He's been an All Star, that kind of thing. But it's not the guys who are the experienced guys that we're really talking about here. It's the other guys, like you said, Seth. Short, Hummel, Trammell, Whitcomb, Corona. These are all guys. So I said 6 out of 11. 5 out. Half your lineup, half of the guys that got on the field for you last night, independent of the pitching staff, are guys that, that probably shouldn't be playing in the major leagues right now.
Yeah, and so that's where, and again, I'm conceding, partly, remember everybody. I'm admitting that, okay, if you want to say that the Astros played down to the level of the competition, because Hunter Brown and Josh Hader played down, I'd say, yeah, that's a
we'll take
check
that
plus
one.
For you in that regard.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, I can't help but acknowledge the fact that that game even went 10 innings.
Yeah.
Is impressive in its own right, given the guys that you're rolling out.
Yeah,
there
they clawed
night.
Their way back into it. Altuve got some big hits for you, including the one in the eighth inning. People are a little angry with us that we mess with baseball gods earlier this week when we did the segment about when are they going to lose a series. You and I are taking some heat over that.
I don't think that's fair for people to act like. I felt like we were pretty honest about the fact that It's a little bit flukish that they've gone 13 series without losing a series.
And if I remember correctly, it's not like we said the next time they're going to lose a series is in the late part of August.
Yeah.
I both said like that series that they got to go to Seattle after the All-Star break is that screams they might lose this series right here.
Yeah.
A desperate Mariners team, you know?
No, if you're going to be mad at anybody, be mad at Sean for actually being at the game.
That's right.
And especially Sean, when he sits right there, when Sean sits in the Diamond Club, especially, horrible things happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you were witness to it last year when you and I went and sat in Joe Sutton's seats in the Diamond Club. Kyle Tucker broke his leg that game.
Kyle Tucker got hit by a pitch. And my immediate thought was, it'd just be a bruise. He'll play tomorrow.
Yeah.
What I didn't realize at the time was that I was sitting next to the Grim Reaper of Sean Pendergast. And Sean Pendergast shows up in those same seats last night, and Hunter Brown has one of the worst performances of his year.
He did. The crazy thing about that, that when Brian McTaggart tweeted this after the game, he tweeted, "This is the most runs Hunter Brown has given up in an outing, 6. Since a game at Minnesota July 6th of last season where he gave up 7 runs in the first couple of innings. In Minnesota, mind you. Not at Daikin Park or what would have been Minute Maid Park. In Minnesota. And I look at Amy, I'm like, yeah, we were at that game. We were at that game too. My hex on Hunter Brown, I've been to 200 Brown starts. Mm-hmm. And other than that period at the very beginning of last year where every start he had was the worst start ever, during the dominant Hunter Brown era that we've been in right now, he's really had 2 bad starts. And I was there for both of them, and one of them wasn't even in Houston. It was in Minnesota, godforsaken place that is.
Ugh. So with Hunter Brown, his ERA is it's above 2 for the first time in a couple months.
That was jarring last night to look up after he gave up all these runs, because you know on the Jumbotron up there, they update the stats by at bat, like if they're updated instantaneously. And after he gave up all those runs in the first few innings, to look up there, Seth, and see Hunter Brown with an ERA that doesn't begin with a 1, I'm like, oh my God, he's human.
2.21.
He bleeds.
Oh, still the second best ERA in the in the AL after Scooball.
Yeah, it's
like every time I see Scooball's name, I think of Liam Cohen.
Scooball.
I was saying it wrong. Sorry, Liam Cohen.
Scooball. Yeah, man. Second best in the American League. It's still got a 2 in front of it, though. I don't like that. I liked it.
He's
when it
third
was
in strikeouts after only having 3 last night. Yeah. That was I mean, he was still inducing a lot of whiffs.
Yeah.
But just not striking guys out.
Strikes.
It felt like the Guardians, who the night before, by the way, what's his name? The Guardians manager. It just managed his butt off the night before. Yeah. They were bunting in the second inning. They were doing everything they could to just get off the schneid and win a game. However they prepared them for Hunter Brown, there might have been some late nights and a couple pots of coffee into just figuring out exactly how can we get on Hunter Brown, because it just looked like they were jumping on him.
What happened to Jake Myers? Somebody's asking on the text page. He's got a calf injury, and he didn't play last night. He's not on the IL, so that tells me a little like Isak Paredes' hamstring earlier this year, Seth. Remember that, where he pulled a hamstring, but they didn't put him on the IL, so you felt like, all right, well, he'll be back soon. That's kind of how I feel about Jake Myers. They need him back in the line. They need big league bats in this lineup.
But he's also got calf discomfort.
Yeah.
And just go back to various calf discomfort people. Yeah. Christian Harris with the Texans had calf discomfort. Yeah. That was no big deal. Yeah. He'll be ready. Oh, I didn't say when. I meant December. He'll be ready in December. Yeah.
Still doesn't.
We're still not sure. He still wasn't out there at OTAs, but we've been assured. Don't worry. He'll be ready.
He'll be there. Yeah, he'll be there.
Yeah, the mistake we make is thinking that D'Amico's putting any kind of a timeline on
this. Yes. Sean is Ted Cruz. I'm the new local jinx now, I guess. Stop going to games, Sean, is another message.
Did anybody on the text line tell me when I was correct in my use of the term vertical integration?
Nobody has.
None of our economists told me? Okay.
Nobody has, but there is somebody on here who is trying to correct some of the slang that I was talking about before.
Oh, yeah.
Saying that it's Chris says, I believe, because I said somebody tweeted me about one of my takes yesterday, said that's cope. Yeah. Which is, you know, slang for you're being delusional. You're coping with something that you know is not true by trying to talk it into being true. He says, I believe the kids mean cap, which means it's not true.
No, okay, there's two
no
of
cap
them.
Cap means
both.
It's true. Chris, he said it probably auto-corrected from A to O. No, Chris, don't get out over your skis. Yeah. You know, don't try to come at slang experts like Payne and Pendergast, all right? There is cap and there is cope. There's two different things.
Yeah.
Idiot. I'm just kidding. I didn't know either, Chris. I had to look it up too, Chris. I'm just joking.
Hey, Ben, how would I call that guy stupid in modern slang?
Oh, God. I don't even know.
Look it up.
I used to have a list of ways to call people stupid that I would keep because it was like in sports radio you end up calling people stupid so often that you try to mix it up a little bit. So I liked using the old time, you know, calling somebody a ninny. Yeah, that's a fun one.
That's a ninny. Like,
when you lean into it too long, and I've gotten old enough now that people think I'm using it because like that's the actual term I use. So now I got to start going the other direction and start using the what the kids say, so I can sound like I'm trying way too hard.
Do you keep the list on your phone like I do of things that annoy me, or do you have Google Doc?
Oh, problem? Skibbity. Skibbity is a way to call something stupid.
Skibbity?
Man, that's skibbity. Yeah, Delulu.
Haven't heard
again,
that
though. Listen. What did we say earlier? It seems like a lot of slang. Kids have gotten lazy. All they're doing is cutting a word in half.
Yeah.
And then using it grammatically incorrectly and calling it slang. This is the one, Delulu.
Yeah.
That's because delusional.
Delulu.
Okay. So you're saying, that's lazy.
Delulu.
That's lazy.
You know what it is, Seth?
Your whole generation is Delulu.
You know what it is? It's sus. That's what it is.
I know, which again, what does sus mean? You know what? This is a problem I have with a lot of the slang the kids are using, is it's too easy for us to figure out.
Yes.
It's got to mean something. Back in the day, go back in the 1950s, parents were probably besides themselves with confusion about why cool was being used the way it was.
Right,
what,
right.
Wait, what the hell is... Oh. What?
Dude,
what do you mean cool?
Remember?
But I hear sus. I'm like, oh, you mean suspect. You're just lazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember late 70s when bad became a thing? Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's
bad.
I'm like, you know, it's not. It's fine. No. Bad is good. Yeah.
Yeah. You're misusing it, but it's also like it's enough of a change.
That's
you guys
it,
are
man.
Just truncating things.
That's all you're doing. Lazy.
That's trunk. Generation.
Yeah.
That's just trunk.
Good job, Seth.
Yeah, I'm tired of all this trunk slang creation.
That's trunk. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. I was told by Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic that it was going to be a brand new Rafael Devers that we were getting. This is an amazing story of Rafael Devers' first week in San Francisco. Who can I trust now that Ken Rosenthal got this wrong? We'll talk about that coming up next. I was told by Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic that Rafael Devers was a new man going to San Francisco. That the now that he's with an organization that's treating him with respect and that kind of knows what they're doing, that the version of Rafael Devers the Giants were getting was going to be one that was willing to play other positions other than DH. The answer, if they were to ask him, whereas before, Rafael, will you change positions for us for the betterment of the team? The answer was, gets to San Francisco. The answer is, do we have that one? No. Well, he's San Francisco. They all thought the answer was going to be Rafael.
Yeah.
Well, as it turns out, the new and improved Rafael Devers lasted all of just hours, it would seem. He got there, and according to – now, keep in mind, they played the Red Sox in San Francisco, the Giants did, just after the trade. So Devers is – which is really crazy when you think about the – American and National League dynamic. Like right after the trade, which took place at a weird time in early June, one of the very first series that's played is between these two teams, that the Red Sox travel out to San Francisco to play the Giants. So the new and improved Devers appeared to not last all that long. Here's Will Fleming. This is the Red Sox play-by-play guy who shares a story on a podcast about things he was hearing about Devers very early in his San Francisco tenure, ghosting a Giants legend.
They think he's going to win them divisions and hit a bunch. He's going to hit home runs. Of course he is. They don't yet know what is going to happen with the player. I was there the second day. Will Clark was there to work on ground balls with him at first base, and Raffy didn't show up. So that's the person that these guys have been dealing with for a long time.
And the follow-up to that, because that's obviously somebody who's with the Red Sox saying something about Devers now with the Giants on a podcast. Yeah. Multiple reporters confirmed that definitely, not only did that happen, it's happened multiple times.
Multiple times is the part that I was waiting for when I was reading about it because, okay, it's his second day there, sure. I mean, you're still trying to get your bearings and everything. Like, okay, what is the deal? You give guys a pass on that when they don't know the schedule and the routine and all that. So the fact that it's apparently him ghosting these sessions has apparently become a thing. Ah, boy, that's a... So this falls into that category of, well, what did you expect? You know, a guy comes with a certain amount of baggage about him or to just some controversy or whatever it might be. What did you expect necessarily?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's the all-time Houston athlete who's been brought in where it was confirmed? Like, you wondered just maybe about this guy and like, oh, boy, yep, turned out to be kind of sus.
Yeah, that's, I would say, okay.
This is skibbity.
Yeah, we've had plenty of guys come and go over the last several years. The easiest ones to think about are the basketball players because these are like high level, you know, like the Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, that chain of events there.
Dwight Howard was always an awkward hug for me.
That was
you're like, okay, we want to try to embrace these guys. But you know, when you hug somebody and you're just kind of doing this out of politeness more than anything.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, what was Dwight's reputation? He was a coach killer, you know, with Stan Van Gundy. L.A., he was supposed to be part of a super team. And for a variety of reasons, including maybe maturity issues with Dwight, it didn't work out. And yeah, Dwight is a good one. That's a good one.
I still give him a pass though because it was Dwight in that weird way. It's never like they did some really good things.
Yeah.
Obviously. But it was also okay, he can't coexist with James Harden necessarily, but it wasn't dramatically so. Yeah. Everything was just kind of, it was like Dwight Howard himself is everything felt awkward the whole time.
I do wonder, it's funny you bring up Harden because I would guess people are going to say James. People are going to immediately think when they're answering your question, Seth, who are guys that we should have known? Like this is who they were. People are going to say James Harden. James Harden was a sixth man in Oklahoma City, and nobody had any inkling of James Harden having this thirst for a nightlife or anything like that when the Rockets traded for him. That became
Daryl Morey, and also, Daryl Morey didn't know himself that James Harden, he didn't know what James Harden was going to be as when he was the guy.
Yeah.
And we also can't whitewash the fact that they were the second best team in the NBA with James Harden.
Sure.
You know, like that's like, so that doesn't even, doesn't even come close to it for me.
Yeah.
So it's a more, hey, a guy comes in, he's got a certain reputation, and that is exactly who he is.
Yeah.
The opposite would be Ed Reed. Because Ed Reed came in and sure, he's past his prime and everything, but we had no idea that it was going to end up being like the pivot point of an organization falling apart.
I'll tell you who the opposite was for the Texans, who it's turning out is exactly what you're asking the question about with his new team, is Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs is a client. Like Stephon Diggs, that's all we heard about was this is exactly how it played out in Minnesota. He was great to be around, and then he wasn't.
Yeah,
this is how it played out in Buffalo. He was great to be around. Then he wasn't. And maybe it would have played out that way here in Houston. We don't know because he was only here for a year. But he was a model football citizen last year for the Texans. He got voted a captain by his teammates. New England is getting the version, the version like you're talking about right now, which is, all right, he has this reputation that precedes him, and he's been every bit of that since he signed the contract with the Patriots.
Yeah, that's why it was so smart of Caserio, even though he's criticized for it at the time. I understood what Caserio was doing. They modified Stephon Diggs to basically be a one-year deal.
Yeah.
And that's what Diggs has done in the past. Now you wonder if, man, Diggs seems to be at that point where maybe he realizes that, you know, he's only got a few years left. He got a nice big contract from the Patriots. And with some of the reports coming out of New England, it sounds like, who knows what the actual situation is, but it sounds like he's phoning it in.
Yeah.
Go outside of Houston, the all-time greatest modern example, I would guess, has to be, well, I was about to say Antonio Brown, except that Antonio Brown helped win a Super Bowl for the Bucks.
For the
eventually.
Bucks, yeah.
But when Antonio Brown showed up with the Raiders, all right, well, you get what you paid
ultimate.
For.
Yeah.
Shows up in New England, well, you got what you paid for.
Yep.
Then lo and behold, all of a sudden he goes and he's part of a Super Bowl
winning effort.
He's
part of a Super Bowl winning effort, but I would submit still that Tampa
ended
Bay
shirtless jumping jacking his way off
yes,
the field.
Yes, like I said, Tampa Bay. And that and the number of times it happens is a measure of how great a player you are, right?
Yeah. Like the number of times you get away with it.
The number of times you get, like, Rafael Devers might hit 30 home runs or 35 home runs for the Giants, and some of this behind the scenes stuff, which is already starting, maybe like it was with the Red Sox, maybe too much for them. And if he's still hitting, some team or teams are going to think that if he gets in our building, we're going to know how to handle. That's what all these teams thought with Antonio Brown. To your point, they all thought they could handle it.
I like the pleasant surprises, though, too.
Yeah.
The one guy that popped into my head. As far as a guy that came with, maybe you felt a certain way about him.
Yeah.
Austin Rivers. Because Austin Rivers.
Yeah, I hated him.
I had a guy who did not like Austin Rivers, and he got here, and I'm like, oh, this is everything that actually you'd want in a basketball player.
Yeah.
It's, in terms of the way he operates and practices and everything.
I was that way, too, with Russell Westbrook, actually. I was not a Westbrook fan at all when he was won the MVP in OKC. Not a real fan of his game. I found him fun to root for. I didn't like the fact that they had to completely retool the entire way they played basketball as a team to accommodate him. I didn't think that had a shelf life, but I had fun rooting for Russell Westbrook.
But that wasn't necessarily I guess it was a little bit of the same issues that he'd had at other places in terms of him wanting to play his style of ball, but it was also his skill set too.
Yeah, he just couldn't shoot.
There's only so much that he could do right.
Yeah. Couldn't shoot. WEEI Afternoons on Twitter tweeted this. Thanks to Drew Doherty sending me this tweet. Will Clark has now confirmed what Will Fleming told WEEI yesterday. So that's it. So Will Fleming was on WEEI when he had that bit of audio we played. The Giants offered to have Will Clark mentor Rafael Devers at first base after the trade from Boston. Devers didn't show up 3 days in a row.
And then
that's Will Clark confirming it, and they say, welcome to the Rafael Devers experience, San Francisco.
I'll tell you what, no, but that again, I mean, when you've got somebody from kind of in-house confirming the negative story, that hints that it's probably even worse than it sounds like from the outside.
That's just one story, right? Like, that's just
one. Say Drew Doherty sent that to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Drew's starting his new job as the he's teaching media.
He's running the at Straight Jesuit.
Yeah.
He's going to be running their they have a campus TV station there. He's going to be running that. And he's going to be teaching history, I think, right out of the chute. But I think there are bigger plans for teaching media and things like that.
He had like a triple major in college, as he was also a sports dude. But it was like American history, Latin, or something weird like that. Early French philosophy or whatever. I knew that Drew was a smart guy, but he's an actual Renaissance man.
Oh, God, that I get tired just hearing you say that. Three majors.
He was too talented to be in sports. I'm glad he got out. I'm glad he got out of this cesspool industry. And now you're working with molding young minds to apparently get into this cesspool.
Well, he went there too, so it's kind of cool. Like, he went to Strike, so that's kind of neat for him, I think. So I know he's super excited. Good.
I did a video for him for his party, wishing him well wishes and everything. And I was kind of nervous about it because I made some jokes that I wasn't sure people were going to get or not. Kind of backhanded, like just joking, kind of like locker room type stuff.
Right.
But Drew himself liked it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if other people were offended on his behalf or anything.
That's all right.
I called him selfish for leaving because because it hurts me personally.
Yeah. That's
helping mold young people into productive adults.
Now that you mention it, it is very selfish of him. That's true. Uh-huh. Drew, if you're listening, selfish. Drew-centric, that's what that is. People are still saying here, let's see, about remember when someone said the Astros play down to their opponents and you guys said, not this version of the Astros? Pepperidge Farm remembers.
No, listen, Pepperidge bitch. We've already been over this multiple times, all right? I'm not going to concede over and over again that last night is a good good example of what you were talking about. Yeah. I've already conceded it. You're going to make me go all Tom Brady on Bill O'Brien on the sideline. I know.
Can I read the rest of the text?
Oh, yeah.
Just kidding. You guys are great.
you're my Pepperidge bitch.
Yeah.
That's a term of endearment.
That's right. It's like bad or cool back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Jim, he's my Pepperidge bitch. Oh. Yeah. Excuse my language, kids. Don't use that.
Don't do that.
Pepperidge.
Yeah. All right.
Pepperidge was definitely a slave owner back in the day or something.
For sure.
That is a Pepperidge plantation, for sure. Sounds like to me.
All right. We played some Jack Easterby audio from earlier this week from an interview you did with Ross Tucker. I promise we won't do it again. But just listening to that voice made me feel good enough about what we're doing now. We're actually side by side, peak Easterby era and where we are now. And the turnaround is remarkable. Where have we seen the biggest upgrade in the last 4 years? With either with the Texans, or I'll throw the Rockets in there too, because they've had a similar track. We'll do that coming up next. They just played the grand slam. They're replaying the game from last night, and Martinez just hit that grand slam off a hater. Oh, front row Crawford boxes. Terrible.
I feel bad for whoever caught that ball, because you get the, you know, front row of the Crawford boxes. You got a really good chance at some action, but then you end up catching the ball that is only a home run ball in one of 30 MLB ballparks, and it's the other team doing it.
It's the other team doing it, which means you got to throw it back.
Did you see the Dodgers fan that it looked like, I can't remember whose home run it was in the Dodgers series, an Astros player hit a home run, and when they cut to the Dodgers fan, it looked like the guy who had caught the ball, it almost looked like he pulled a ball out of his pocket and threw it on the field.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the timing of it was such that I don't think he had caught the home run ball by the Astros player and then put it in his pocket and then remembered to throw it out. I think he tried to pull a rope-a-dope on everybody and be like, oh, no, I'm throwing it out. And meanwhile, it was actually he's keeping that.
He's hanging on to the home run ball. Oh, okay.
I respect cheating. The hustle.
You do?
I respect the hustle.
It's cheating, man. That's cheating. You're supposed to throw it back. Those are the rules. Opposing team hits it, you throw it back. All right? So we played that Jack Easterby audio earlier this week. He did an interview with Ross Tucker, our good friend, and it was mostly
used to be.
Yeah.
So he asked a bunch of softball questions to Jack Easterby.
Good friend, air quotes. Yeah. Now he's just sus. So Easterby was on there and Ross asked him about his time in Houston and why he was so polarizing. I'm not going to replay the answer because we have to get out of here by 10 a.m. It was that long. It was like a 3-minute answer.
It was ridiculous. A filibuster.
Complete filibuster of just of complete BS. But having to listen to that and being able to gain a little perspective and appreciate where we are now is an exercise I was going through. So Seth, I just started jotting down yesterday. Like, man, peak Easterby was like 2021. You know, like once he gotten everybody else out of the building, and now it's new people in there, and these are all people that he knows or he can bring in or he can help manipulate or whatever. That 2021 season was a complete fever dream, and I was jotting down, like, okay, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receiver, best defensive players on the team, and it is remarkable. Look, the Texans still need to win at a high level in the postseason. I get all that, but that it's been spun around this quickly to where in 4 years you go from Davis Mills to C.J. Stroud at quarterback. You go from a starting backfield of Rex Burkhead and David Johnson to Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb. You know that Nico is your wide receiver now, your main guy, and it was Brandon Cooks back then. And then especially on defense. Like, they had no corners on those teams. None. It felt like, like Terrence Mitchell was a starting corner on those teams. You got Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter now. You've got guys, you got beasts coming off the edge with Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. Just like the massive upgrades that the franchise has gone through in such a quick period of time. And they haven't gotten everything right, but they've gotten a lot right in this time frame, you know?
Yeah, though, I mean, you look at that in terms of whether or not there are upgrades at those key positions. The only place that you could look at really is say, okay, well, you swapped out Jonathan Greenard for Danielle Hunter, and they both had really good years last year. But, oh, yeah, you've got Will Anderson on the roster as well.
Yeah.
So it serves yeah, your edge rushers, like, it was John Gunnard and Jacob Martin.
Yeah.
Remember? And remember, Jacob Martin would drive me insane because he only came in on third and forever.
Yeah.
But he was really, really good as a rusher. But he weighed about 132 pounds. And I had to watch McClain would consistently say, like, look at Jacob Martin's stats versus Jadeveon Clowney. I go, no! Jadeveon Clowney is on the field.
Yeah.
Jacob Martin comes in for 12 snaps a game and gets some sacks. Are you serious?
Yeah. Of all these upgrades, though, is there a bigger one? Like, if the biggest upgrade, just looking at the Texans here, 2021 to 2025, it's easily head coach, right? Like, none of these are even close to the upgrade from David Culley to DeMeco Ryans.
I'm going to wait and see on Culley and see what he does in his next day.
In his next chapter?
Coach. Yeah, he's okay. Only had one shot at it.
All right,
you know?
Yeah, another bite at the apple. Maybe he learned some things, you know. Like,
remember the first time I Googled David Culley? When I thought, this is how I treated it. We found out that David Culley had been interviewed. And immediately my mind is like, okay, this sounds like a favor. Like, a lot of times somebody's trying to get their name out there. Somebody has a relationship with David Culley or whatever, so they interview him, and it gives them a little bit more cred.
Yeah.
But no. So because when I Googled David Culley, the first guy that popped up was a gym manager in Long Island.
Yeah.
That was how far below the radar David Culley had flown up.
Yeah,
there
I'm like, this
career.
Can't be real. This can't be. Oh, it was real. It was definitely real. He had some good, you know, he had some good axioms, though, that he lived by, you know.
It's hard because David Culley, he seems like a genuinely awesome
No, he seems like a really nice guy. Yeah.
Just completely out of place, though.
Which is why every segment that we did about silly decisions that he made was always prefaced with, I think he's a really nice guy.
I think he's a really good dude.
Yeah. So that's.
It was a bad, yeah. I've told you this before. When you're aiming for, because they were aiming for some kind of a transition coach there. It's like anything in life when you intentionally lower the bar, you've got a chance of really undershooting.
Yeah.
If you don't treat it. And I felt like they were going for all of these feel good Ted Lasso type things that they wanted out of a coach, and they just set the bar way too low. So Lovie Smith would have been actually a good choice in 2021.
A good 2-year choice.
It would have made sense.
Yeah.
With potential upside there, too.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like, okay, he's an actual NFL coach.
Yeah.
He's a head coach. He operates like an NFL head coach.
I think biggest upgrades from peak Easterby era to today, easily head coach is the biggest one for me, from Culley to DeMeco Ryans, who I think is one of the best young coaches in the league. I think second for me is in the secondary. Like, this is a secondary that is lights out, you know, like that.
Yeah.
There's the secondary the Texans had back in 2021 had a disgruntled Justin Reed in the final year of his contract, and that was it. They had nothing
right,
else.
That was
in that
it. Justin
secondary.
Reed was the one, and that's where you could say, okay, you know what, though, Justin Reed, I'd love to have him on this team right now, but it is a testament to how dysfunctional everything was there. Justin Reed was the guy that got into some kind of an argument with the head coach, reportedly, in a meeting. Because when good people are in wacky situations, sometimes they're not going to act like the model citizen. Whatever Justin Reed was upset about in that moment, I support him. Having zero clue what it was all about.
I blindly support him on this. Yeah. It's just when you jot those names down and you do it as a ledger, 2021 on this side and 2025 on this side, man, it is so much more exciting.
Wait, when did JJ leave?
JJ left after 2020. COVID year. Yeah, he was. You know, he wasn't here for Culley. He wasn't here for Culley. Someone is wondering. Okay. Someone's asking, learning new slang and recruiting younger listeners. That's a relief. Between the mustache and the ice cream truck that you were talking about the other day, I was worried Seth was doing some more sinister moves to try to get the younger audience in.
I don't have if anything, you should be more concerned. I'm like going a whole hog into it.
Yeah, yeah.
With my skibbity riz. I learned that during
the slang is throwing people off the scent of the really creepy stuff.
Yeah, they're like, oh no, Seth's one of the coolest 32-year-olds I know. Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Well, you don't
skibbity riz, I learned. So skibbity means stupid, and riz is like you're, you know, pitching woo, the way Sean called it back in the day.
That's exactly right. That's
I was talking to my wife about that yesterday, pitching woo. I just brought it up out of nowhere. I'm like, That, I don't know when pitching woo started, that term, but it's by far the creepiest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know,
man.
Like a lot of things back in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Like things were super creepy,
yeah.
But people were too naive to realize it or anything.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't realize it. Like, yeah, that pitching woo and throwing a Mickey in a drink isn't as quite as funny as when played out in real time. It's not as funny as it sounds in a song.
Okay, yeah. you know, Amy and I love watching Family Feud with Steve Harvey. I think Steve Harvey is one of the best people at his job, not just in entertainment. Him hosting Family Feud is hilarious to me. He's really, really good on there. So we love watching Family Feud. So anytime you bring up, I think he's the best Family Feud host of all time. There have been several. People bring up Richard Dawson, who's the OG. He's the original.
Yeah.
And they bring up just anecdotally, like, well, he used to kiss the wives and things like that on there. They probably wouldn't get away with that. They were showing old Richard Dawson Family Feud episodes on the Game Show Network like a week ago. You watch it now, it is so much creepier than you can even describe. It's one of those things, Seth, that when you describe it, you're like, oh, okay, I mean, that sounds creepy. But then you see the video. It's like the Ray Rice thing. Like, you hear that he hit somebody, then you see the video of him actually hitting somebody, and you're like, that is really terrible. The episode, he's literally walking up to the wives and kissing them on the lips while their husbands just sit there smiling, looking at it. Like,
and he's got a look in his eyes.
Yes, he's very, very sociopath and very, there's no volume to him at all. It's very even keel, just almost looking like, hey, I'm going to do some things to you. Yeah.
No, he looks back at the audience. I'm watching one of them now. It's the way he looks back at
so
the
bad.
Audience.
Right? Am I right? Isn't it worse looking at it than talking about it?
Yes. It's so creepy.
It's so bad. Oh. And that's what people think you are with that mustache right now.
This is the best mustache that anybody's ever had.
It's true.
In the history of mustaches.
It's awesome. It is awesome.
Hey, I got a question.
Okay.
Because I was watching a World War II documentary the other day. And I was thinking about, so a lot of times what happens in, you know, societies, especially if they have a king or a dictator or something, is people adopt the hairstyles and the facial hair of rulers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm watching this Hitler documentary, and I'm thinking, like, how that mustache was so stupid.
Yeah.
That I think Himmler was the only one that even tried to emulate that.
So they didn't have a bunch of like thin, like,
not that I remember, not that I could see. Yeah. And it wasn't when you watch the footage of the citizens or anything like that. It was such a stupid mustache that even like the Fuhrer couldn't get that to
couldn't
go
get
by.
It over.
Right. Yeah, there's got to be a reason for that. Yeah. Well, did he disallow people having his mustache?
Oh, I'm the only one that can have this
stupid mustache.
Yeah, I'm the only one that can have this mustache. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Did a lot of stupid things. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
Bold statement.
Yeah, hot take.
He was kind of sus. You know, looking back on it,
right.
Hitler was kind of sus.
Kind of sus, no doubt.
Yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Oh, the top 10 edge rushers are out on ESPN. Did the D tackles earlier. Did Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson make the cut? Top 10 edge rushers according to coaches, scouts, and executives in the NFL. We'll hit that coming up next.